Hey everyone, you're listening to the official podcast of 4playernetwork.com. Check us out at that address for everything you need to know about our community, monthly giveaways, and nightly live streams. You can even support us on Patreon at patreon.com/4player. And last but not least, you can catch the live recordings of these podcasts every single Thursday night on our Twitch channel. We hope to see you there. Enjoy.
Eyes are crossing.
We gotta go.
You know what? I'm gonna let that be the beginning of the podcast. Hey everyone, welcome to 4player Podcast. This is our day or E3 2018 show floor day two podcast.
That feels just so wrong.
It feels like it. E3 is like you said, it feels like it's going on forever.
It's 42 weeks long.
And I think a lot of this has to do with because the announcements and everything started like a week before E3 even officially began. So, and then here we are, and then we get here, and there's the press conferences, and then there's 3 days of the show floor, and like the show floor is open like a total of like 2 or 3 hours longer than every other year we've been here. So we're starting to get very exhausted. We did see a lot of cool stuff today. Maybe not as much as we did yesterday, but there's still plenty to talk about. Just to give you kind of a taste, if you're listening on the go, we have some of the stuff we have coming up tonight. We have help me out here. I'm going to talk about Resident Evil 2. We talked about it a little bit last night.
We'll talk about We Happy Few.
We Happy Few.
Sekiro.
Shadows Die Twice.
Metro Exodus.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff.
Why do you say it like that?
Metro Exodus. I was just trying
Sekiro,
to
Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice. Metro Exodus.
No, you're reading too much into it, Chris Davis. I'm excited to hear about Metro. I'm going to see Metro tomorrow. I didn't get to see it today because we had to make a last-minute appointment to see Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice, and I wasn't about to miss that opportunity to play Metro. But I was able to reschedule our Metro appointment for tomorrow, so I'm still going to see and play Metro. But
can you push it up like an hour so I can go with you?
Because
I want to play it again.
Why can't you go with me anyways?
Because I have to watch Dying Light 2 at the same time.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. Nope, you're screwed. You got to go watch Dying Light 2. Also, I want to remind everybody or kind of reiterate to everybody that's watching live or listening on the go that this is probably the last podcast we're going to record while we are in L.A. Tomorrow, we have a full day of the show floor, and then we have a community meetup we're doing in the evening, which, by the way, if you are in L.A. or if you're going to E3 and you'd like to join us for that, you can find details on the site. At 4playernetwork.com. We hope to see some of you guys there. But after that, we kind of need to come home and pack and get ready to go because we have a flight that leaves super, super, super early on Friday morning, and we would like to get some sleep. So the plan is I have to be back. I have things to do in Austin on Friday that I need to be back for.
Really?
Yes. I'm having furniture delivered on Friday, to tell you the truth, Chris Davis.
And Robin isn't home?
She's working because she's got a job. Uh-huh. And I had the day off. Uh-huh. This is not a podcast discussion, Chris Davis. I've got shit to do. I got places to be. I got video games to play. The point is, we're going to record the last E3 show floor podcast on Sunday night when we get back. It's probably around 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. We'll wrap up. We'll talk about all the stuff we see tomorrow. So keep an eye out for that. It's going to be a couple days before that one actually comes out. But hopefully you've enjoyed the coverage we've done so far. We have a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. What? I like your hat, Crispy.
No, Wangla says you're flaunting your elite 1% status, having furniture delivered to your house.
Yep, I guess so.
Into a home that you own.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I guess
that you're remodeling.
I'm speaking the truth. We're not remodeling.
And that you paid for.
I'm not remodeling that shit. Are you kidding me?
You're putting in new windows. You've been putting
I already had the new windows put
blinds.
In.
You've been painting everything.
God, white
you're
people.
Installing a bar.
That's not
it
remodeling.
It sounds like a remodel.
I'm not
like
installing a bar. The bar is a standalone piece of furniture.
Uh-huh.
It's not like installed in the wall.
It's not a real home. It's just a condo.
Yeah, it's not a real home. It's a condo.
It's my summer home.
It just happens to be a condo that I own.
When do we get to see it? We can advise over for drinks.
Oh, I've been there.
I'm actually going to do just that.
Wow.
Bastards. Anyways, can we not talk about my home? Can we talk about video games, please?
All right, Nick's home address.
Nope. E3 2018, guys. We are in Los Angeles. We have lots of stuff to talk about. We are all very tired. Let's get to it. Can I start with the thing that I want to talk about?
Yeah, what is it?
God damn it, guys.
That 4-hour line?
I waited in line.
The Odyssey.
I waited in line for, I shit you not, 4 hours.
It is insane.
You know what? Not only is 4 hours long when it's, you know, just on its base level, but like the fact that the only thing I had on me to keep me entertained was my phone. I charged my phone like from 50% back to 100 like twice in the course of like going through that damn thing, because I was constantly in Discord, switching between apps, like trying to desperately find things to keep me entertained. Which, by the way, people in Discord, thank you so much for hanging out and talking with me, because without you, that would have been the most boring 4 hours of my entire life.
Oh my God.
Why didn't you bring your Switch, though?
Nick.
I didn't know I was going to be waiting in line for 4 hours, so I didn't bring my Switch.
Nick, I think Cyberpunk is maybe like the thing I'm most hyped in the world about right now.
Yes.
And if that was playable, like an hour demo, and you had to wait in line 4 hours to play it,
yeah,
I don't think I'd do it.
What?
I don't think I'd do it, man. 4 hours is nuts. That's nuts. I did 2 hours at Sega and I wanted to die.
Dude, I did 4 hours. I will say this. Waiting in line for 4 hours to play Resident Evil 2 is now my record. Before that, It was like 5 or 6 E3s ago. It was for God of War 3. And it wasn't because I wanted to see God of War 3 that bad. It was because we realized that on the last day of the show floor, we had to identify the games that had the longest lines. And we split it up and we each said, all right, you play this, you play this, you play this. Because we know we're all going to have to wait in super long lines. Right. And I got the God of War straw. So we all went and did different games. And that was like a 2.5 to 3 hour long wait.
Dude, there was that Sega line. To answer Krita's question, do people have their Switches out waiting in line? Yes, they absolutely do. That Sega line was like, I shit you not, 30, like, it was 30 people sitting on the ground, and probably 20 of them had Switches. Like, I've seen so many fucking Switches this week.
Yeah, I saw several Switches waiting in line for Resident Evil as well.
It's really changed everything.
I was dying inside knowing that I didn't bring my Switch.
There was one guy who had like a regular 3DS, and I was like, oh, man. Like,
you must feel poor, so stupid.
Poor that guy. and I'm just sitting there like with nothing.
Oh my God, it was the worst. But I had a fun time talking with everybody in our Discord. It was nice. It kept me going.
It was funny how, like, 2.5 hours into this, the short show floor opening.
Is Chris's mic
over?
Good.
Is it messing up?
It seems kind of low. Is Chris's mic need to be resynced? Anybody? Yes, okay. His mic is off.
One second.
Sorry. Please recede the microphone.
No, Scarecrow. That was the line I waited in to get the dog hat.
And before, I know we're going to talk about Valkyria a little bit in a second, but Crispy, how long did you play Valkyria for?
Oh, I mean, the demo itself was probably about 8 minutes, and about 4 of that was gameplay.
Oh.
So.
My God.
So, you know.
It's actually kind of proportional. You waited in the line about half the time as I did, and you played a demo about half the time as I did.
Yeah.
So like I waited in line for 4 hours to play a 20-hour demo. Yeah. Or sorry, 20-minute demo. 20,
oh my God, yeah. That'd be an incredible demo. Oh my God,
that
demo.
Would be amazing. I just played the whole fucking game. Fuck it.
Yeah.
I waited in line 4 hours to play a 20-minute demo. Crispy waited in line 2 hours to play an 8-minute demo.
Yeah, dude. It was, and it sucked too, because like you could tell the demo was originally supposed to be like, oh, here's the tutorial mission, here's a cutscene, now here's a real mission. But they were like trying to push people through so fast because they had so many, like they had 3 lines. There was 3 different lines that you had to wait through to get to the demo to get the fucking hat. And there were so many people trying to do it that they were just pushing people through. So it was like every other person got to play like alternating missions. It was basically you had enough time to do the first mission or the second mission. And the person who went before me did the second mission. So they reset the demo so I could only play the first mission, which was just a glorified tutorial with like 4 characters in it.
Yeah.
And introduced absolutely nothing new at whatsoever. It was just straight up Valkyria Chronicles 1, basically.
Yeah.
But that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And those characters, the new characters are pretty cool. I like
the dog's
them.
In it. Right?
I didn't see the dog.
Oh, motherfucker.
I didn't get to see the fucking dog in the game. But I did get to see the new tank, the new like replacement for the Edelweiss, and that was pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, I don't know.
It's kind of a shame.
It was really disappointing. But hey,
you got the hat. You know what, Crispy? Was there any indication as to how many hats they had left?
That was going
to
be my question.
Well, when I got in the line, I asked the guy. She was
like, you got the last one.
No. When I got in line, I asked the guy, like, oh, are they still doing the hats? And he's like, dude, they have so many hats. He's like, yeah. He's like, they're not going to run out of hats. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Maybe. So then when I went up and so the way they did it was they put a sticker on your badge, and then after you finished the demo, they initialed the sticker, and then they gave you a ticket, and then you had to go to a counter, give them the ticket, show them your badge, and then they gave you a hat. And I was like, listen, I got $9 in cash in my pocket. If I give it to you, will you just give me another hat? And they were like, no, literally everybody has asked that.
and strangely enough, it's always $9.
Yeah, I don't know what that's all about.
okay, then
I guess that kind of covers Valkyria Chronicles, doesn't it?
Maybe I'll go play it.
That is all I have to say about Valkyria Chronicles. Although I will say they are keeping like the kind of narrative tradition alive with like a very wide, diverse cast, and each one of them is like completely voiced.
Yeah.
And completely fleshed out their characters in their own right. And they've even kind of like added new mechanics, like that they call social link. Where you can do things kind of like in Fire Emblem, where like between missions you can have like conversations between them, and they'll like build bonds, and all the characters have like weaknesses, they have like like flaws, and if you do these social links enough, they will develop to the point where those flaws actually turn into strengths.
So
it's like kind of an incentive to keep up with that. But yeah, it looks great. It looks fucking gorgeous. It has that original like
sketched.
What platform
was the demo on?
PS4.
Okay.
Yeah, it has that original like sketchbook art style to it.
I think I'm going to play this game on Switch.
It looks so fucking cool. I am crazy
excited
about it.
Was there any mention in the tutorial that you played about weather systems, things like that?
Weather systems?
It's supposed to take place in like snowy seasons, right?
I mean, I think the thing is they're switching between different seasons and whatnot. Because like there are things in like the trailers and stuff they've shown where it's not snow-covered.
Yeah, I don't know. The guy didn't really mention anything about it. My impression is just kind of like that's all based on the particular mission that you're playing. Okay. You know, it's not like you're going to be playing a mission and then like a random snowstorm is going to blow through, you know?
Yeah.
But like because this is another war story, it's going to be, you know, it's going to take place over months, and you're going to be moving across Europa, going to different fronts. So that's probably what this is all about.
I can't
wait
to play this. And I think it's going to be terrific to play on the Switch. I just have a good feeling about this. I think it's going to be a great game for the Switch.
Yeah, if it's for anyone who's like deep into the lore, you're actually playing as the Federation this time, which was the other big army that the Empire was fighting that the little nation that you were from in the first game. I can't remember what they were called.
I don't either. It's been so long since I've played that game.
Well, they were allied.
But you know what? I love Valkyria Chronicles 1, and this sounds like more Valkyria Chronicles 1, and that sounds fantastic. So moving right along, I wanted to talk a little bit about the game we talked about yesterday, Chris Davis, because Chris Davis played Resident Evil 2 yesterday, the Resident Evil 2 remake. That is what I waited in line for 4 hours to play today. Yeah.
It was so depressing walking by you after 2.5 hours.
Dude, I was like,
you were just sitting on the ground, and it was progress I'd made in about 45 minutes.
Yeah, I was so excited and jazzed to play this game, and the fact that it even exists, and the fact that I know it's coming so soon. Like, you know, waiting in line for that long really sucks, but like, man, I was just the closer I got, the more excited I got. So you know what? And they gave me a shirt, you know, and it was a nice 20-minute demo. It showed a really well done demo because it shows a really recognizable part of the game,
mm-hmm.
And it gives you a really good taste of how the game is different than the original.
Significantly altered.
But it's significantly altered, but familiar enough to still be nostalgic.
Yeah.
Like
that opening area of the police station with the statue.
Yeah, totally like, new.
Yeah,
If you remember the original Resident Evil 2, yeah. The lobby of the police station is like, it's kind of flat, and then in the back there's eventually a ladder that you can drop down to go up to a second floor, balcony.
Emergency ladder.
But in the demo for Resident Evil 2 remake, there's two stairwells in the back corners that take you up to those balconies, and there's doors up there that you can go through.
Yeah.
But like certain things, like the door that you eventually unlock on the left side as you come in, the direct first door on your left that you eventually go through, which leads you to the hallway where you meet the liquor for the first time.
Yeah.
That first room you go through is very recognizable, but as soon as you go through that door, that like L-shaped hallway is like totally different.
Yeah.
But I was walking down the hall kind of expecting there to be a liquor introduction there. And I'm wondering I haven't read any impressions from the demo where people got through the demo and got to a point where they met the liquor, but I'm wondering if people knew enough about what they were doing, if they got through it fast enough, would you have eventually met the liquor in the demo? Because obviously I didn't. My demo expired before I got to that point.
Did you find the shotgun?
I did not find the shotgun, no. Was the shotgun in the demo?
Supposedly it was, yes.
Motherfucker! I had the one question yesterday about whether or not you can blow zombies in half.
Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, I also feel really dumb because I wasted like 5 minutes of my time in the demo running around trying to figure out, because I kept there's like a door, the first door on the right, you have to go through that first, and it's like this like sliding barricaded door, right? And it has a little bit of power to it, and you turned it on and like the door starts to raise and then it like shorts out, and for whatever reason in my head I didn't recognize that, like, oh, I can crawl under the door. I thought the door just didn't open, so I thought I had to find another door. And I went and I checked like every door in the room like twice, and I had to ask. I was like, am I missing something? I can't find a way out of this room. He's like, yeah, you got to go through that door. I was like, fuck, the light's green. Why the fuck did I not look at it? But you go under the door, and you eventually – you're trying to find this – you see on the security monitor, you're trying to find this police officer who was like trying to signal for help. Like he's waving at the camera, and he's being chased by a zombie.
Yeah, he's found a way out.
Yeah. And he's basically, he has like a notebook that where he's kind of mapped out like a way to get out of the police station. So you're trying to find him so he can tell you how to get out of the police station. But like, as soon as you enter that place, like this, the police station is super dark. Like the original Resident Evil 2, it's super bright. Like you can see everything. There's not many places you go.
The lobby in the original game feels untouched.
Yeah. Everything here is dramatically different. Like if you remember like It's basically the same as the Resident Evil 1 remake, where like you think about how bright and vibrant that opening entryway was.
Feels lived in. It doesn't feel like something bad has happened.
Yeah, and now, but in this game, it's like it does feel like something bad has happened here. But like everything is like all the lights are out. You're using a flashlight, so you're walking around. You know, Leon's holding his gun out and he's holding the flashlight on it. You're
stepping through water because a fire sprinkler's gone off.
Yeah, so like the entire – you're walking through the hallway and you can hear like your footsteps in
the
water. Oh,
no, it was a toilet was just bursting water for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, like it's super atmospheric. I loved it.
And then you walk around the corner and you see the fucking four bodies.
Yeah. Like the first time I saw a body, I was like, fuck, I don't know which one's going to pop up.
And that's the thing about this game. The zombies play fucking coy with you. You can't trust any fucking corpse you see on the ground.
I did.
Because it may just fucking jump up.
I did kind of suspect that they weren't going to – none of them were going to pop up until I got to a cutscene where it introduced the zombies,
which
was true. God damn it, Crispy.
I crossed my eyes because I can't focus.
Real quick, to kind of just skip ahead, I don't want to go into too much crazy detail about the demo, but I will say the zombies are frightening. Like they all look and like react differently.
Very imposing.
They shamble along they're a little bit more bullet spongy, but like when you actually shoot them, like it feels really responsive. It feels really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like the feedback you get of like the bullets, like hitting them is really nice.
The visual damage is really strong.
The visual damage
is
great.
The limb rending.
The first time I fired my gun in this game, the door opens, the zombie comes shambling through, and I just like started to aim down, shot him in the kneecap. His whole leg just like falls off and he just like face plants on the ground. I was like, all right, walking around you, and went around him. And that's a totally viable strategy. And that was so great. And like it was so nice how easy, like quickly you pick up on the things. Like if you're familiar with Resident Evil, like finding herbs and like immediately knowing you can combine them and like to save yourself inventory slots and you can combine ammo and like all this stuff feels really nice. But yeah, man, I this game is just, it's like my fucking dream game, man.
It's
fucking here and it's so good.
It's like it's an so idealized.
I wish I had gotten far enough to like see something more dramatic like the liquors, because like I can't imagine, like this is so atmospheric and beautiful. And the one thing I will say that kind of bugged me, and I hope this is just maybe I couldn't hear it very well because the E3 show floor is very loud.
Say the least.
Resident Evil 2 had a very striking and very, for me, nostalgic soundtrack. Like the song that, like the music that plays when you walk into the police station, iconic to me.
Yeah.
I didn't hear any music when I walked in.
It was exceptionally light.
Yes.
But I think that was just to solidify the horror scene. And I'm really hoping
those tunes from the original Resident Evil 2 make their way back into this game, or at least some kind of remixed version of them.
Oh, they definitely will.
Because I love the soundtrack for Resident Evil 2, and I think it would be a shame if they left that out.
Yeah.
But yeah, everything I think feels great. The quick turn, by the way, we talked about that yesterday, is holding back on the analog stick and tapping
I guess it would be
X or square or something.
Okay.
So you pull it back, tap it, and he does a quick turn. Very intuitive, it's very good. Nice.
I'm glad that's in there.
I like the thing that you find boards, you can board up the windows. You mentioned that yesterday, that was really cool.
Yeah.
3Nil says in the deluxe edition you can swap soundtracks between the new one and the original.
I'm sorry.
There's a deluxe edition?
Did you say deluxe edition? Is that a joke or are you serious? Because oh fuck.
If this is a thing, I need it.
Oh fuck. Okay.
I was gonna buy this on PC, but if it's available, I'll get it.
Oh my god. Okay. Anyways, the point is, it's really great. I don't want to spend too much time talking about it because, like I said,
what was the shirt they gave you?
Huh?
What was the shirt they gave you?
It was an RPD shirt.
It says RPD on it and has like blood splatters on it. The back has like bloody handprints. Police Department
like the logo.
No, not the logo. But
it just says RPD on it.
I had something about
it. I used to have one.
Maybe it says it on the sleeve or something. I didn't notice. We'll look at it after the show. It's a great shirt, by the way. I don't think I've ever left E3 with more shirts that I.
We have a lot of shirts.
Well, some of them I bought today.
Oh man, I got a Kojima production shirt
today. Yeah, that shit looks cool. I got a really nice Ghost of Tsushima shirt today that I paid for. The
game doesn't even exist.
But the game doesn't even exist yet. I got a fucking shirt for it. It's so nice. But yeah, man, I just want to say if anyone out there is nervous about Resident Evil 2,
don't be.
I think this is just as like exciting and impactful as like the first time you saw Resident Evil 1 remake.
And if you want like a Resident Evil 4 through 6 experience, go away.
Well, I mean, like this is kind of like combining Resident Evil 4 with Resident Evil 2. And I thought I was worried about what that might feel like. And I'm not really worried about it anymore. It feels wonderful. It controls like a dream.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't know. It's great. Wait, what's the... So Chai Tai says deluxe edition adds sheriff costumes, noir costumes, the Resident Evil 1.5 girls costume, and Wesker's gun. Is that pre-orderable on Amazon? Fuck me, shit.
Okay, so if it
somebody
has,
talk about a game, I'm going.
If
to
that has the 1.5 girl costume, I forget her name.
Fuck me, shit.
But if that's the case, they might be incorporating the 1.5 content because when they were developing Resident Evil 2. They like completely scrapped the initial version.
Oh my god! There is a deluxe edition. Wait, is it only a download code? What is this shit?
So there was like a fucking shooting range. There were all different weapons. There was an enemy that was like a zombie monkey thing that wasn't in any of the games or recycled anywhere. So if that's in there, that's fucking cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty optimistic about it, guys. I don't think anyone should have anything to worry about. This game looks great. God.
Motherfucker.
I found it.
So I played about 4 minutes of Fist of the North Star, Lost Paradise.
Which is the new Fist of the North Star game being done by the Yakuza team, right?
Yeah, and it feels a lot like a Yakuza game. I like the part of the demo I was in a city called Cassandra or something like that.
Okay.
And I was just running around and it's just kind of this big open city and there's a bunch of dudes on the streets. And like when they see you, they're like, "Hey, we're going to kill you." And then you fight them. But this game's a little more bloody and violent than Yakuza is. Because I know absolutely nothing about Fist of the North Star. I was like Googling it. And looking at the Wikipedia page, like, after I played the demo. But, like, every single attack and, like, every move, like, every enemy you defeat, they just, like, explode from within. Like, he just punches dudes and then it makes their brains explode. It seemed really cool. Yeah. And I didn't get to play this myself, but I saw somebody else playing the demo. And, like, they were in the city, too. And they, like, went into a bar and they did a little mini game where he like puts on a tuxedo and like bartends for somebody, and like you have to do this little mini game to like mix a drink for some lady. Like, it seemed kind of cool.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. It's just like a bunch of really muscular dudes in a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Did you
wasteland
play this in the same appointment you had for
making
for, or not appointment, but like same?
Yeah, I mean, it was like the line for Valkyria Chronicles ran through the booth. So like when we weren't moving, there was like spots in the line where like whoever was standing there would just play whatever game was right next to them. And then the line would move and we just hand it to the next
That's
person.
Not a bad idea, actually.
It wasn't that bad. I mean, you had to wait most of the line to get to that point. Yeah. But yeah, he like punches pressure points and then they explode and die. And
did you do the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da thing?
What do you mean?
I mean, he does this kind of battle cry and he just punches all the pressure points.
I don't remember a battle cry, but there were like a lot of like it was kind of like Yakuza, where like as he'd fight, he'd build up heat and then he was like glowing blue, and then you could do like fucking like really fast, like super combo, like punches, like tuk-tuk-tuk-tuk. But then they had a lot of like prompted contextual things. So like it was really cool, because like you would hit circle to like do a stun blow, and then when they were stunned, you could go into this like kind of more prompted scripted thing.
Okay.
And it was all kind of environment dependent. So if you were next to a wall, he'd do one move and like do something where he'd like throw them into the wall. There was a really cool one where he just like fucking, I don't know, he like used his thumbs and just like smashed them into like the side of someone's head, and then like he'd like just turn around and walk away and like their fucking head explode or something. It was really cool. But like every time you did one of those, there was also like a freeze frame moment where they put up like the name of the move on screen. It was cool.
Okay, cool.
It was neat.
Cool.
Seemed really violent.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Well, series is supposed to be very violent.
For sure.
So
it's like Mad Max meets Yakuza or something. I don't know.
That's awfully fair, actually.
All right, Chris Davis, let's move on to you. What do you have? What did you see today that you'd like to talk about?
Well, the first thing I played today is Overkill's The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Overkill Software, that? The guys behind the Payday series, of which I have put a shameful amount of hours into over the past several years.
That used to be
your division. I still don't even know what this game looks like. I feel like it was announced so long ago, I don't even know.
So imagine basically Dying Light minus the
polish?
The polish and the depth of the combat from that.
Oh.
This is a game you...
That
you,
doesn't sound appetizing.
You play as one of four survivors in Washington, D.C., each one has a backstory. Each one is their own class, and they also have personal objectives to do during the zombie apocalypse, the walker apocalypse, whatever you want to call it.
We can call them zombies. We don't need to call them walkers.
Walkers,
just yeah, because they call them walkers.
All right. In the demo, I played with another journalist and two of the devs behind the game, including the actual level designer, Almir, and the mission was to raid another survivor camp and steal back the water purifier that they had stolen from your camp.
Okay.
Wow.
So actually, the idea behind this does look like Dying Light.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. The visual fidelity is pretty decent for what it is. It was rough running. It was like sub 30 most of the experience.
Ooh.
But it was functioning.
Did it strike you as like sub 30, but like they have enough time to like iron it out?
Absolutely. The game comes out in November.
Oh my god, is Merle in this game? Is this based off of the show?
No. I mean, they may take like visual inspiration from the show.
I'm looking at a screenshot that shows Merle and is straight up the actor.
I mean, if Merle is in the game, that's a surprise to me. I didn't realize that, but it takes place in D.C. And
interesting.
And Merle didn't get to D.C. Anyway.
Well, where'd he go?
That's a spoiler for like season 3 or 4, whatever.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, so the idea is that it's you're going to be facing humans often, competing for resources and loot and finding things in the environment. You're going to loot a lot of shit. You're going to loot cars, kitchens, cabinets, everything you can possibly think of. You can find crafting components that you take back to your base. And there's no limit on how much you can bring back to your base. But at the same time, you also need to be wary of the horde. The more noise you make on the map, the more likely hordes are going to spawn.
Is it like an open map or?
So there's
these are the guys that made Payday.
Yeah. These are semi-linear maps. There will be pockets of walkers that will appear across the map. They respawn differently every time. Mm-hmm. Same with the loot table. So every level that you play, every time you play a level, it's going to feel different.
Okay.
And especially that comes into play when you consider what you equip your character with, like a lock pick or wire cutters, an electrical kit to disable like car alarms and you know, locks and things like that. But yeah, it's all about A, keeping quiet to not attract as many walkers as possible, or B, using that to your advantage and using that against the humans you will have to fight.
Okay.
So as you, the more noise you make, the more it fills up a meter at the top of the screen. Every full meter basically alerts the horde and spawns in more walkers.
Okay.
And they spawn somewhere on the map, and they somehow get to you. They find you. They just hear you and find you. So what you can do in combat against other humans is you can take your silencers off your weapons, which are breakable, by the way. You want to use those sparingly. Just go loud with your weapons attacking them and just let that meter fill up. And then eventually it'll hit a point where a horde will spawn in and they will go for where the sound is and attack whoever's there. So in our case, it was a little bit us, but they spawned in behind the enemy that we were fighting.
Okay.
So they kind of wiped them out.
Oh. See, that was one thing I thought was pretty cool, that like just the concept of trying to like use hordes of zombies as a weapon. And I think they've kind of teased that in things like Days Gone. I think they've talked about it. And it was also something that I was hoping to see more of, is something like Dying Light. And I'm hoping that still becomes a thing, because like Crispy said, when we were talking about Dying Light the other day, you spend a lot of time fighting human enemies, and it would be really cool to be able to attract zombies and use them as weapons against those human enemies instead of just always falling back on melee. So
yeah,
that's cool.
And the gunplay in the game is all right. Again, this is Overkill. They made Payday 2, really refined gunplay.
You spent like 800 hours playing that game too, right?
No, about 400.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're kidding me?
No, like 400.
That was his division before the division.
Yeah, it was.
Oh man.
Yeah, I played a lot of that game.
Hot damn.
But yeah, the combat, because the combat was really good in that, and it's in itself. The melee combat, on the other hand, is jank. There's only like two or three animations per weapon that you can get per melee weapon. Like the character I had, her name was Maya, and she had a machete.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it felt like I was just clicking the mouse to stab and then clicking it to stab again. You could walk up to walkers and you could do a stealth takedown or a takedown in general, which you just stab them directly in the head. They instantly die. But anytime you get close to a walker, and it's just a fucking crapshoot, because they don't feel like they have all the animations they need. And so sometimes you could just fucking fall down to the ground, and then you're just being surrounded by walkers, and they're trying to eat you.
Just a zombie bukkake, if you will.
It's a zombie bukkake. The good thing is that it's not permadeath for your character. You do eventually respawn. It's kind of like what Payday 2 was with custody of your character. You'll eventually spawn back in. You'll have a base amount of weapons and health and things like that, and you can go continue on the mission.
Yeah.
And the down but out states is basically you being swarmed by zombies, you're on the ground, and you can't do anything. So you got to rely on them to come kill all the walkers that are surrounding you and pick you up and heal you. I think it's okay. I think it's
isn't this supposed to come out like polish sometime fairly soon, like August or something?
November. November 8th.
They don't have that much time to iron out the kinks.
Well, they announced this game back in 2015.
Yeah, I know. This game has been at like four E3s, and I haven't seen it at any of them.
This is the first E3 in which it's actually playable to the public. Or to press. Anybody? Yeah. It's not even available to the public. You've got to have an appointment as press or industry.
Interesting.
It looks like it has promise. I'm more hopeful than I probably should be because of how well Overkill did Payday 2. There's some systems in there, and there's some promises of progression and skill trees and upgrading your characters that wasn't shown, as well as going into the background of your characters and fulfilling their overall objectives in the game. But it wasn't there. And the amount of jank and low fidelity that was going on because it was just a development build, it was a little disheartening.
I'm going to be totally honest here. I don't have a lot of faith that that game will come out without the jank. You know what I mean?
That's certainly possible.
I feel like that game will come out and it will always just be kind of a janky mess, even if it's fun.
I mean, I would disagree there.
What was that game that Overkill was working on that they showed off last year?
That wasn't The Walking Dead?
They weren't working on
it. To project. Google!
Yeah, I thought the Payday...
So there was another team that helped with Payday DLC called Lion Game Lion. And they were working on Raid World War II.
That's what I was thinking of.
And that was basically take the Payday formula and do like Kelly's Heroes in World War II. And the initial alpha that I played...
What was the game you just mentioned?
Raid World War II.
That wasn't this team.
No, yeah, it was Lion Game Lion. Again, they did Payday DLC.
Yeah, they've only done Payday, Payday 2, Payday Crime War, and they're apparently working on Payday 3 and something called Storm.
Storm is the ultimate project for them that they've been hinting at for like 5 years. It's basically sci-fi Payday in space.
Oh my god.
Huh.
But yeah, they've released like a couple pieces of concept art for the game, never shown anything else. I really doubt they're actually working on it right now.
They have a type, don't they?
They address. And it's again, the heist formula is good.
It's not uncommon for developers to find their formula and stick with it.
Yeah.
Like Remedy.
Like Remedy knows the third-person shooter.
I get it. Video games are difficult, and you find something that works, you find an audience for it, you latch onto that. I get it. But, you know, you like to see a little bit of daring do and experimentation, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah, they've got 5-6 months to work on this, so... I'm hopeful. I am hopeful.
All right, well, we appreciate your enthusiasm and hope.
Yeah.
I hope you are not disappointed.
Me too. It's been a hell of a wait.
What else? Crispy, yep.
We Happy Few?
Sure. Let's talk about We Happy Few a little bit. I saw a lot of people in chat who, when we first mentioned this at the beginning, they were like, isn't that game already out? And it's easy to see why you might think that. It was out in early access. In fact, we played this at E3, I want to say it was last year. In fact, I watched Crispy play a demo of it last year, I think. It was on the show floor. It was in Microsoft's booth.
Maybe that
was 2 years ago.
I don't think I played a demo for this before. I think today was the first time I've ever touched this game.
Oh, well, then maybe I actually did play the demo. The point is, I played it or I saw someone play it.
I don't know. I mean,
at the Microsoft booth.
I don't have enough faith in my memory to...
At one of the previous E3s.
To be certain about that.
Now, here's the thing. This game was out in early access, and at the time when it was originally announced and, like, demoed, it was... First, when it was announced, the trailer made it seem very, like, Bioshock-esque, in that it's like, how would you describe the...
Well, I don't know that I would say the trailer necessarily described it as being Bioshock-esque. I think that's just the closest thing people latched onto of like, it's kind of like Bioshock.
It focused very heavily on like story and like
the trailer was like the beginning of the game, which was a cutscene that leads into this very non-linear, non-narrative based stealth survival game, very much in the vein of like, sir, you are being hunted.
Yeah.
And it was
nobody talks about that game.
Yeah, what happened to that game? I played that a little bit for
it came out and then like it was okay.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they decided to change it. I don't know.
But yeah, this a lot of people were really kind of disappointed. They thought it was going to be one thing and it was something completely different, and support and hype for this game kind of just
completely dissolved. If you watch the announcement trailer for this game, it was very much kind of like it had the same vibe, like the world had this like very creepy like
It's like
Bioshock esque like Rapture vibe. Like all the people town are
It's very like British mod kind of like 1960s.
Like, yeah, it's all very psychedelic, and like all the people in this town are like hooked on this like drug called Joy that makes them all like smile like the fucking Joker and the 1989 Batman. They had this like these weird like face masks they put on, and they're all super happy, and they immediately recognize people who aren't on Joy and like.
Yeah,
they're called downers.
Yeah, you're trying to escape this oppressive system, and everyone in the society is kind of like hunting.
It seems like
you.
Like maybe the government or some like unseen entity is using Joy to like control people.
Well, the whole thing is like it's whatever country this is supposed. Well, I mean, it was originally the United Kingdom. It was originally Britain, but now it's like it's called the country of or it's called Happy. The country with no history. Like it was this real like dystopian future thing where like they swept in, they completely changed the culture, and they just erased all history and replaced it with propaganda.
But they do mention like, cause there's mention of Germany and Britain and everything.
Well, now there is.
Yeah.
So that's what it was. Okay. Now what it is a much more narrative story-driven kind of almost, I mean, based on what we played.
Also,
linear
one thing that you
kind of
forgot to mention is that when we first saw it, it was procedurally generated.
It was very much, everything was procedurally generated. It was supposed to be, I mean, it was a survival game.
Yeah,
you know,
but it led to a world that you would. So you go into something expecting something like Bioshock, right, where everything is kind of meticulously created and placed to like be very atmospheric. But when you boot it up, you find out that the world's procedurally generated, which makes everything kind of feel fake or
thin.
It makes it easy to see kind of through the facade. You know what I mean?
But now what they've done is they've gone back and they've added a story mode to it. So they have this campaign story mode you play through where it is. They say it is a mix between like curated design, like level design, and like some sections of procedural generation. I have absolutely no idea what the ratio between those two is.
So I spoke to her a little bit while you were playing it. And she was talking about the game is kind of structured into these like islands that you go to.
We talked. So like what we saw was like a very small portion of what this world was supposed to be. But there's always this spot where you come up
from underground, right? And you're in this like kind of big open space. And I'm pretty sure it's that big open space that is procedurally generated. But you will eventually get funneled into these areas that are like more linear.
But a big part of this demo was trying to get to a train station.
Yes.
Which I'm pretty sure all of that was pretty much planned out.
Yes.
At least for the demo's purposes, because she knew exactly where everything was, telling you where to go, things like that. But we did see hints of like a fast travel system, so that does still portend a larger, less linear sort of world gameplay. But the big like draw here, the big news is that now there is a story. You actually play as a character who has like dialogue and a backstory that
voice
you're exploring.
Acting.
Voice acting, yeah.
Motivations.
There's a whole plot going on now. But it does
start to feel a little more similar to something like Bioshock.
Yeah. Yes, it does. There's looting, you know, there's manipulating things in the environment.
Stealth.
There's stealth. It's all pretty basic. None of that got too deep in the demo. We didn't really see any, you know, like we didn't see really any weapon types that weren't just like pipes or bats or anything like that. Yeah.
But I did ask her if there were guns in the game, and she basically said she's pretty sure, because the person that we spoke to was not like necessarily a developer directly involved with the game.
Most of these people
are. But she did say it seemed like she was pretty sure it was mostly melee.
Yeah.
Let me ask this. The biggest
thing about this game is joy, basically.
Sure.
How it's altering society and howing people see see how shitty the world
is around
them.
Yeah, it's kind of the underlying it's the underlying thing that kind of drives.
I mean, say underlying, but it is the conflict.
Yeah.
So what happens if you take joy?
There's no, I mean,
well, in the demo,
there's
you
nothing.
Don't.
Like, yeah, that's not.
There's nothing in the demo.
That's not like a thing that you're doing.
I mean, the joy like, just kind of makes everybody sheep.
What this is? Yeah. Okay, hang on. Let me just like get through this real quick.
Okay.
Because we're still losing track of something here. There is a story mode now. There are named characters. There is like kind of a more curated experience, but this is still a stealth survival game. This is still about managing survival resources, about crafting things, about, you know, working your way from point A to point B as, you know, kind of intelligently as you can.
Yes.
And avoiding conflict whenever possible. And the game is still meant to be replayed multiple times. There are actually three different playable characters that you can play as. You play the game the first time as a guy called Arthur, and then as you play through the story, you actually meet these other two characters, and then you can go back after you finish the game and play through the story mode again from their perspectives.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they do like cross paths and intersect, but you can kind of see what they're doing when they're separated, basically. So they've kind of added this like narrative breadcrumb trail for you to follow now through what is still an open world stealth survival.
Yeah,
game.
But they're slowly feeding you things like unlocking, like the main character's like remembering things about his past when he sees things, and that's kind of like telling you more about the world and his role in
and
it.
I mean, there were like cutscenes and stuff, like
and
the other aspect of the game, basically what the game was before all of this, is still going to be in the game.
Yeah, which is collecting
but
stuff
it's gonna be,
and crafting
it's,
stuff and
they're gonna have like a sandbox or like kind of like an arcade mode, you know, like original version of what this idea was added into the. It sounded like it's gonna be added into the game after launch though.
Yeah,
but the game is gonna launch as this kind of like more narrative experience, and then they're gonna add the secondary mode that's kind of closer to what they wanted it to be later. It's interesting. What we played was cool. It definitely
is more polished than it was last year.
Yeah,
it
definitely kind of has. Like, I feel like if they had shown this last year, people would still be talking about it now. You know, people would be really into it.
I think
it.
They saw last year how quickly people saw it and then were disappointed by what.
Yeah.
By finding out that it was different than what they expected.
I think it's kind of weird. Like, I
it's very
in
reactionary.
In the space of a year. Like, this game completely just, like, pivoted into a completely different direction. I mean, it's almost, it's maybe not quite as extreme, but it's almost that same kind of thing of, like, Fortnite, you know?
Yeah.
Like they were doing something that people just, like, didn't get or want or appreciate or whatever. And then they were like, well, shit, we've got this game we got to sell. What do people want? They looked around, they saw something, and they went, okay, we'll just make this into that. And then that's what they did.
Yeah.
Which is...
It's unusual.
It's weird. That's a weird trend, and I don't know how I feel about that.
I mean, that right there is kind of like, like that is one thing that like that is only possible because of something like early access.
Yeah,
they released an early access, saw the immediate reactions to people were having, saw the reactions to the initial trailer at launch where people assumed it was very like BioShocky, and then realized, oh shit. Well, we can still pivot and change it to something
we've
more.
We've talked about like kind of the, you know, like I don't think early access is a completely perfect system or is free of abuse or problems or issues. But I've talked about how I think it is helpful and it is interesting how certain games that maybe wouldn't fit within a normal production pipeline could be made over very long periods of time of like incremental updates and improvements. But usually when I think about that, I'm thinking about games, you know, maybe like Sea of Thieves or like No Man's Sky, where like they still have this like this concept. They still have this idea that they're trying to go towards and they're just like shaving away things that don't work, adding in things that do work, but it's all kind of servicing this original concept. Whereas you've got these other games which are just like basically gutting out the insides of it and just like putting the shell of that game over a completely different game to make something new. You know, it's weird. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm not saying this won't be a good game when it comes out. It might actually be really interesting once they've had a chance to really nail it down, polish it, and tweak it and get it where they want it. But like, yeah, I mean, like production is just getting into this really weird, nimble state where like, wow, you can just completely pivot in the space of
a year. It's very reactionary, which is strange.
Yeah.
But yeah, otherwise, I'm definitely way more interested in trying this game and playing it now that I've seen it this year versus the state it was in last year, for sure. Yeah.
And the final build is supposed to be like July, right?
I think it's supposed to come out in August.
August.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Yeah,
but it looks interesting.
It definitely looks interesting. I would keep your eyes peeled for it. It seems like a pretty interesting project.
Can I run through Bandai Namco real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so we had an appointment with Bandai Namco today. They showed off three games and a trailer, basically. It was stuff they'd already announced. Soul Calibur 6. They showed off Divinity 2 Original Sin Definitive Edition. And they showed off Jump Force, which is the new Shonen Jump game. I guess I can go in that order.
Yeah.
It's kind of reverse order anyway. They actually showed off gameplay. They played a match of Soul Calibur 6 in front of us. It looks good. The visual fidelity they've been putting into it, like the particle effects and everything, looks really fucking good actually. The one of the more popular questions we've had about Geralt being the big star character. He never uses his second sword.
Never?
As far as I could tell, he never uses it.
You mean his demon hunting sword?
One of the things I had heard is that like he pulls different swords depending on which opponent he's fighting.
For what in the Witcher series, has two blades.
Sorry. Don't mansplain Witcher to me, Chris Davis.
I'm sorry.
I get it. No. But like, he's got the steel sword and he's got the silver sword. Steel swords for people, silver swords for monsters, right? So like in Soul Calibur 6, if he's fighting someone like Mitsurugi, he should be using the steel sword. But if he's fighting someone like, I don't know, like Nightmare or something, he should be using the silver sword, right?
Well, that's not what happens.
That's not what happens, not what you saw?
That's a missed opportunity.
I mean, all I saw was him fighting one of the male ninja characters. It wasn't Mitsurugi, it was somebody else.
And he's using the steel sword?
I believe it was the steel sword, yes.
So, I mean, you never know.
I'm just saying, you may be right. That detail may be in there, and that'd be great.
That would be cool.
But it was not demonstrated.
I think it'd be crazy of them not to.
I mean, that wouldn't affect gameplay at all, but it'd be a nice little touch.
There's a couple touches they're doing. They're adding in some features from 3 and 4 and 5, like the Soul Reverse Edge. Which is like kind of a counterattack based on a meter. They've really cut down the amount of space the HUD takes up. Uh-huh. So like your special meter is basically right next to your health bar, just in the very center by the timer. It's very small, but it does a decent job of letting you know, hey, you can use this now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a fighting game aficionado. I don't think any of us here are. But so. Just the weapons-based combat and the fact that Geralt's in it, it makes it look pretty good.
Yeah.
They show off Divinity 2 Original Sin Definitive Edition. That is a mouthful.
Isn't it Divinity Original Sin 2?
Whatever it is. I don't care. Divinity. It's basically just the console port of... basically Divinity 2 with about 45 pages of patch notes thus far, including a completely reworked final act of the game. There's like a village in there that they completely reworked how all the characters interact and how decisions you made earlier in the game pay off later on.
And this definitive edition is what coming to, I mean, are they just releasing it as a brand new product, like as a retail product?
They're releasing it to consoles.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm not certain if it's an update for PC. They didn't mention it. But yeah, they were mainly just demonstrating how it worked with couch co-op and consoles. So, big whoop. The main thing they really wanted to show off, and the one they spent the most time with, was Jump Force.
Yeah, which that's their new announced game. So.
This is their new crossover game that's meant to bring Weekly Jump characters and universes together in one fighting game. It's not done by CyberConnect like we thought it was. Mm-hmm. It's Spike Chunsoft.
Wait, so after all this, this is not the...
This is not CyberConnect.
It's what?
Spike Chunsoft.
What's that?
They've done a number of like Japanese fighting games like that.
Okay.
But
what does the internet feel about this now? I feel like this.
So here's the thing about it. Everybody hates the visual design of it, right?
Okay, good. I couldn't stand it, to be totally honest.
There's a significant reason for that. This game is meant to be like what Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe was. This is the Weekly Jump various universes combining with our Earth. And so, as such, all the characters have to have redesigns that reflect our Earth.
That's dumb. I think that's dumb. I'm going to go ahead and say that right now. I think it's dumb.
So, yeah, you've got, like, the city was actually New York. The mountain they showed off was the Matterhorn. I mean, they're saying that all the universes are combining into one, and the Earth, our Earth, is being torn apart by the inclusion of Naruto and One Piece and Dragon Ball and Death Note and whatever else they decide to announce in the next few months. They didn't really show off any like strict matches. It was just like montages of characters fighting one another.
So this is the trailer they showed. This was not a...
No, it wasn't a trailer. It wasn't a trailer that they made public just yet, evidently.
It was just a video montage of...
It was a video montage of various fights. It's a 3v3 game. They at least for this...
But there's only two characters on screen at once in a match.
Yes.
But you swap them out.
You can swap kinda them
like
out,
Dragon Ball
but
Fighters.
You can also call them in, like in Marvel vs. Capcom, for special attacks as a group.
Gotcha.
So some characters have ultimate transformation forms, like Naruto into his fox form and Goku into his Super Saiyan form.
It looks so dumb.
And you can combine those into like large attacks on a singular enemy.
It is so...
But it doesn't look good.
It does not look... Especially after watching something like Dragon Ball FighterZ and being like completely blown away by how good that game looks, to see the same character rendered like this is like trash.
It's weird.
I'm sorry. I know that sounds harsh. That's just weird.
And they decide to add Death Note for some reason as a fighter? Like, I mean, they just hinted at it. They didn't even show that in the demonstration. That was like, oh, by the way, let me show you one last thing as we switch to the next game we talk about.
Yeah.
And it's the fucking end of that same trailer.
Wonderful.
I'm not looking forward to this game at all. I don't care about this game. I know there's going to be that Weekly Jump audience that is mildly curious about this, but they need to actually come out and show off actual matches, full matches to watch, and they need to demonstrate depth of combat before they can even start thinking about selling this game.
So when we thought this was CyberConnect, when we thought it was CyberConnect, everybody kind of assumed the arenas were very like large open thing. Is that not the case, or
they are large open arenas with again, it's like you've got the stage destruction which you can do. You've got those damage rebounds you can do. You can knock an enemy into like an exploding a gas truck and they'll explode.
I guarantee
you, it's things
110%. Those moves and those specials and whatever don't look even a fraction of as cool as they look in Dragon Ball FighterZ.
No,
it's like putting this game out within like the same year as Dragon Ball FighterZ is a mistake. I think I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a weird move.
It is a this is a very,
it's a weird gamble to take on their part.
I think they just need to use that Shonen Jump license.
It's all the Shonen Jump franchise smashed into a game. I don't think that's a gamble.
That's not a gamble for sales, like, but for like quality and extended play,
people will
like,
just buy it because it's because of that.
Yeah, yeah,
I suppose.
I mean, I've seen,
I mean, we just talked about,
I've seen some hype flying around for this
game. I mean,
game
we just
too.
Talked about Smash Brothers and how that's kind of what they're doing for Smash Brothers.
If they really wanted to make buku bucks, they already know the answer to this. They give the Weekly Jump licenses over to Arc System Works, and they let them make a video game. But that's not what this is. It's some other arena fighter game that doesn't seem to have a whole lot of depth to it.
Yeah, and people in chat are saying most Shonen Jump fans are actually pretty hyped for this. I don't know. I think a lot of it just for me just boils down to the animation. I just think it looks bad. It's flat out bad.
Any Shonen Jump fans, I'm just saying, approach this with caution. Wait until you see actual people playing the game because it's not playable.
I think Arc System Works should be the only studio allowed to make fighting games based off of anime.
Yeah.
Bad.
Or should I know, that's probably harsh. That's probably harsh.
That's a crazy thing to say.
I know.
But there's an audience for that, I guess.
I'm here to make bold statements, Crispy.
And the final thing they showed off at Namco was they showed off a new trailer for Ace Combat 7. It was relatively quick. They said they were going to show off more of the game at Gamescom, but it was not playable.
Are there still jets?
It was playable last year.
There were jets.
Were there jets?
I can confirm there were jets.
They go zoom.
They did go zoom.
So cool.
This is the game we played in VR last year, right?
Yes.
It's pretty dope in VR.
The one thing about the trailer they were trying to hype up was the fact that your wingman is basically a prisoner that's conscripted into fighting for you.
That's cool. Are the pilots of these jets cute anime girls?
No.
Then what is the point?
Well, then again, we haven't seen the enemy.
You're fighting cute anime girls.
There might be cute.
I call bullshit.
Anime girls.
I call bullshit.
Normal. Grizzled army men.
The thing about Ace Combat and the design of the human characters is that they're not meant to be anime focused. They're not like that.
No, this is old.
But they could be if they wanted to.
Don't justify this with the response, Chris Davis. He's leading you on.
Like, if you wanted that, you could have actually gotten a game for that on the Wii.
Was there?
Yeah. Wow. They did a... It was they actually took an anime that was about like fighter combat and they adapted it into a video game. Yeah. And it had anime girls fighting things in the sky. I forget what it was called. I bought the damn game. I think I may have fucking imported it too. I just don't remember what it was called. That's how memorable it is. But anyway, that was Bandai Namco.
All right. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, we have two more big games to talk about.
Well, we got that one.
Yes.
And then what's the other
one? That's kind of where hit Metro.
Oh.
Let's
take a break.
No, we're not taking a break. We're doing this in one shot, Chris Davis.
Okay.
We're doing this in one shot. This is a one segment podcast because we're tired.
Do you want to do it? You want to talk?
Let's do it. Let's talk about that game that we didn't think we were going to see, but goddamn, we got to see it.
So we went to a hotel that smelled like farts. And we saw a game that looked really cool.
Yes.
But did it smell like farts?
No, it was actually very nice.
We saw the demo in was actually very well pointed.
I wish every E3 demo was like this, sitting in an air-conditioned hotel room.
I've never been in a hotel bedroom with that many men before.
Yeah, that was true. We saw about a 20-minute demo of Sekiro: Shadows Die Twice, the new game from Software. Now, I heard this was here. It's not on the show floor. It's not even in the convention center. Like Crispy said, we had to go to a hotel to see it, and we had to kind of make some maneuvers to like even secure this appointment in the first place.
Oh yeah, we had to call That's their exactly. bluffs. We had the big play. We had the
sexual favors.
Like we had to rim so many jobs. But no. We got in and we saw it.
Okay. you just made a mistake, Chris Davis.
I know.
People are going to gift the shit out of what you just did. We were lucky enough to get a demonstration for Sekiro: Shadows Die Twice. New game from Software. Now, the main reason I wanted to make sure I saw this was because even in our Discord, I was noticing a lot of people who were like really concerned about this game because details were starting to trickle out from E3, people who had seen it basically saying a lot of inflammatory things that people who are hardcore fans of like From Software games, i.e. that Dark Souls and Bloodborne, like things that would maybe concern them. Mostly having to do with the fact that this isn't really a Souls-like, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure we saw it so we can kind of clear it up and figure out what this game actually was. And I'm going to, for a second, I'm going to turn this over to Crispy because I need to plug my laptop in.
Okay.
To make sure it doesn't die.
Okay. So, Shadows Die Twice, Sekiro. What's interesting about this game is that it looks to be very similar to Dark Souls and very not at all similar to Dark Souls. It's not, it is not a, it is not an action RPG like Dark Souls. It is an action game with, quote, RPG elements. So you're not like, there is one main character. He's, right now he's called the Shinobi.
The Shinobi.
Yeah, you don't like find new loot or anything or new equipment for him necessarily. But there is a sense of progression in upgrading his like main weapon, which is his left arm, which is that prosthetic arm.
What do they call it? They've been calling it the Shinobi prosthetic.
Yeah, Shinobi prosthetic. So that arm has like all these different gadgets and weapons and things that it can do. And as you progress through the game, you unlock more of those and upgrade them, and you can do a bunch of different things.
So people, like, a lot of the concerns that were being brought up were things about, like, because some of the bigger deals that are being made are things like, it's not a stat-driven game. You're not going to be leveling up your character and then putting points into, like, stamina. No, I thought
they did specifically say there were, like, stats in the game, though, didn't they?
No, they said there's not
stats. Oh, they specifically said there wasn't.
There are not stats.
Sorry, we were speaking through a translator, so...
Yeah. This is not a stats-driven, like, Souls-like game. It is very specifically an action-adventure game that still plays to the strengths of From Software's, like...
Right.
Lineup, so like there's still a certain level of difficulty that I think you should come to expect from this game.
It's more Bloodborne than
Bloodborne's still an action RPG. This is not.
Okay. This
probably, like, they didn't offer any details as to what this sort of RPG like progression would look like, but I'm guessing it's more just like skill tree upgrades that you're like unlocking. And
I think they say your mic is dead again.
Chris Davis.
They talked a lot about all of the character progression, all of the enhancements you're going to be making to your character, all focus on your prosthetic arm.
For the most part.
Yeah. I'm sure there's probably going to be equipment and stuff that you can swap out and whatnot, potentially. Maybe, I mean, that's not confirmed, but like it he seems like he would be hinting
like
at
somebody
kind of
specifically
stuff.
Was asking about like, oh well, he's wielding a katana in his other hand, is he ever gonna get like other weapon? They were like, no, everything, like all, like his progression is pretty much locked into upgrading that Shinobi prosthetic, which was actually pretty cool.
Yes. The prosthetic works in a lot of different ways, and we only got to see kind of a taste of it.
Is it fair to say it's at least a combat tool as well as a traversal tool?
Oh,
yes, absolutely.
So, like, there were things, like, some of the stuff we saw him do. I mean, obviously, we saw the grappling hook that they showed off in the trailer. He grapples around a lot. It's a pretty vertical game.
Yeah,
that's going to be a pretty basic
a lot of
part
cliffs,
of
high like. Like yeah. tall buildings
and not and just not sides. Just in getting around, but also in combat too. He uses it a lot to gain like aerial advantage on his enemies. But we also saw him use it to like launch shuriken. So he can do these things where like he can throw shuriken at distance, or he can do things like he can do a combo where he's like dashing towards an enemy, throwing shuriken, and then leading up, like following that up. With like katana slashes, which looked really cool. And we also saw it transform a little bit into an axe weapon that he was using to break shields.
Yeah, so if there's cool. like a heavy enemy that's using a shield or like heavy armor, you could switch to the axe attachment on his prosthetic arm and basically hack through and destroy their armor before going in with your katana for the kill. Now, one thing that they talked a lot about was there's no stamina in the game. Unlike most Dark Souls games, but instead they have what they're calling posture, and the whole core, the entire combat system is built around this idea of what's your, the entire, the main point of combat in this game is to wear your opponent down and eliminate yeah. their posture first before they eliminate your posture. It's basically, it looks like a stamina bar.
So what they said was Miyazaki's philosophy for combat was the idea of clashing swords. Yeah. Specifically of like swords meeting, not necessarily. So like, you know, in a Dark Souls game, you're fighting humanoid enemies and a lot of what you're doing is like blocking with a shield and then like cutting into them, you yeah. know, and doing that enough times that you kill them. That's not really what the combat here looked like. This combat was a lot more dodging. It was a lot more parrying and it was a lot of like I said, like clashing swords.
But
there was
still
only a couple times where like blade met flesh. But when it does like a bunch of damage.
And it's all, and like, especially on smaller enemies, it's at that point, it's almost always a, like a kill.
Like a one-hit killing kill, switch, yeah.
Or a killing blow. But like, it still very much seems like the combat is like super precision-based, like timing your dodges, oh, yeah. like maneuvering very specifically around the field. Because if you drop your guard for 1 second, you're still going to like take heavy damage and potentially die.
So they were saying things like with the posturing system, for example, like you have a certain amount of posture that you're trying to build up while wearing down your enemy's posture. So things like if you hold block and you're blocking attacks like that, you will lose posture. But if you do a well-timed block, like right at the moment of impact, you will deplete your enemy's posture, you know? Yeah. And it's kind of just about like pushing those meters to where you have the upper hand and then going in for the kill.
Yeah. As soon as someone's posture is eliminated completely and you go in for an attack with the katana, it's basically you're basically going in for the killing blow.
Yeah.
Okay. So like there was times he'd hack at them, yeah, block, hack at them again, their posture meter would run out, and then the next hit he would go in.
Not necessarily though. I mean like a lot of the bigger like boss yeah. enemies were taking multiple hits and you kinda had to go through that a few times. But like a lot of mob like enemies yeah, it was definitely very much like this. The other thing, so the combat itself, though that actual like the role of dodging and blocking was maybe a little more emphasized than it has been in other Souls games. Well, that's not true because the balance and the nature of it is a little different, but you could tell that this was a FromSoft game based on the
combat.
Like it very much looks like that kind of thoughtful like trying to draw enemies out into advantageous areas to fight and like trying to not focus on too many enemies at one time kind of thing.
Trying to whittle down their numbers before moving in for like to fight like bigger enemies right. and stuff.
But the big difference here is that you are like much more agile than any Souls character I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You're jumping like all over the place. Like
there's
in
a
one
dedicated
demo,
jump button.
Yeah, there's a dedicated jump button and he fucking vaults. One of the battles that we saw was like against two or three guys in a courtyard that had like a ring wall around it. And he was using his grappling hook to like grapple around and get over people's heads and like drop down on them like that. I mean, almost kind of similar to some of the stuff we were seeing at Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like it's a lot more, it's a lot quicker and a lot more vertical, which looks really cool. And it looks like they've got this really neat kind of balance going between the two. So it looks like it's going to have a lot of that Dark Souls DNA in it, but it's not going to play like that necessarily.
Yeah. Question.
Sure.
Your character is a shinobi right now.
That's so what they call real them. Quick, they talked about the game taking place in like the 1500.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a fantasy world that's kind of based on the Sengoku period of
yeah.
Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, obviously with like supernatural flourishes to it and whatnot.
Okay. Well, I'm curious, since your character is a shinobi at this point, is there any emphasis on stealth?
Yes.
Yes.
As well as what about ranged combat?
Yes. There were several times in this demo where I was like, that almost felt like Tenchu.
Yeah.
He's like sneaking around, taking out archers and stuff before going in for the...
Yeah, that specific battle I talked about, he set up for that by sneaking around, taking out snipers. And then, like, so it's not a stealth game. It does have a lot of light stealth mechanics in it, but it's really more set up to be this kind of thing where you are trying to put yourself in an advantageous situation to start the big all out battle, you know?
Yeah.
You're not going to be stealthing your way through every encounter, but you are setting yourself up in a situation where you can, you know, take out as many enemies as possible before you before you engage in the all-out kind of soulsy battle.
That's not muting it.
So it's not really like a samurai game, kind of like we were saying at first. There is a lot of that kind of like ninja shinobi element to it. There was a lot of familiar Dark Souls things going on too, though. The most immediate thing that we saw was he literally carries around something that's like an Estus flask.
Yeah,
and like he heals himself in the middle of combat.
I think the biggest departure though, and they weren't willing to go into detail about why this happens the way it is. They couldn't go in. They basically said they were still working on certain things about like the flow of combat and how death works and what the penalties for death are. But they did imply, or they did say specifically, that there's resurrection is something that you can do, but there is a cost to it. So like he was using it to turn the tide of battle a little bit. Like he actually died at one point in the fight, and like all the enemies turned to like walk away. Yeah. And then he used a resurrection, which brought him back to life. And then he was suddenly behind these enemies that were walking with their backs turned, and he was able to attack them again and basically like take out these enemies really quickly. Which was really cool. But he wasn't able to go into the lore reasons as to why that happens or what the penalty is going to be, but there will definitely be a cost to doing that. So it's definitely not the same, like flow of combat. You're not, or it's not the same gameplay loop, I think is what I'm trying to say. Like you're not fighting dudes and then dying and going back to collect your souls, quote unquote. That gameplay loop seems to have been thrown out and replaced with something totally different.
Okay. So at any point, since it's Shadows Die Twice, is there any, once your character's died once,
I think that resurrection I was referring to that they're not willing to go into detail about is what they're talking about. Like, I think that's where the Shadows Die Twice title comes from.
Well, no. What I'm talking about here is there any incentive or any mentioned incentive for maybe letting your character just go ahead and fully die and then just restart from a checkpoint? Is there something like that in that game? Is there a benefit to doing that versus a cost?
They weren't able to go into any of that stuff.
Okay.
Unfortunately. But they did assure me that – they did assure everybody that – that cost benefit analysis of like, you know, making decisions and the spur of the moment and like dealing with the consequences in combat is very much a part of the whole thing. Just like basically, if you're a fan of Souls games and you're familiar with like their gameplay loops, you should be what they have decided upon or what they're working on is very much in line with that.
Okay.
So. What is going on? There are other people in chat. Like, why is this an issue?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. So is there any hint of a release date or is this a 2019, 2020 game?
I don't think they've said yet.
They haven't said anything.
Okay.
And there was a lot of things that they weren't ready to talk about, like basic systems, kind of like what you were saying with the death. Like they weren't really ready to give details about much of anything.
Okay.
But what we saw was a real nice demo.
Most importantly, they opened it up for Q&A at the end, and I asked them about the world structure because it was a very specific part of the game they were demoing for us, but I didn't really give us a taste of like the overall world. I couldn't tell, like, based on what we saw, I was like, I couldn't tell if it was level based or if it was open in any way. So I asked them about it. And the designer that they had from Software was talking about the game, and he basically said it's open and interconnected. And of all of the From Software games, if they had to pick one to compare it to, it would be Dark Souls 1, which made me very happy. I think that will make a lot of people very happy because I think everybody would agree that Dark Souls 1 specifically is widely considered to have the best like world design. So...
mostly, I've heard some things about like the lava world area
in Dark Souls.
Yeah,
I mean, we're talking specifically about the way the world is designed and how everything
folds connected,
back on itself and is interconnected.
Yeah,
Dark Souls 2 was a dramatic departure from that. Dark Souls 3 was better, but was not the return to Dark Souls 1. Dark Souls 1, I think, is widely considered to be the best in terms of that.
Okay, so fair enough.
They are comparing this world design-wise to Dark Souls 1, which sounds fantastic to me. Makes me very happy. I think it'll make a lot of people happy. I think there's a lot of people out there who started to hear things like, this is not a Dark Souls-like, this is not an RPG, per se, and started to really become concerned about what this game actually is. And I think it is, at its core, through and through, a From Software game, but with certain elements that have been changed.
Okay.
Yeah, and specifically the RPG elements. Yeah. But like at its core, like the having to be methodical and like super precise with the combat, which I think is in my opinion probably the most important aspect mechanically speaking,
is still there.
Of Dark Souls game, is absolutely still present here.
Okay.
And it has elements of like Tenchu and stuff in it, which is. If you've seen pictures, I think I tweeted it yesterday because I was tweeting a bunch of pictures I've taken from the show floor. But there's a Sekiro thing out in the main lobby in the South Hall that has it was this big, like tall, like 11-foot,
yeah,
like creepy woman in like a kimono. And like the demo ended with him fighting her on like this really beautiful. No,
that
bridge.
Wasn't a woman. That was the corrupted monk.
Oh yeah, that's right. The corrupted monk is what it's called.
Yeah.
But she's really creepy. Or sorry, he's really creepy. I don't know. Big, tall, like giant, like kimono thing, but like, and then he has like a super small head, but like these two giant swords and stuff. Really cool, beautiful, like visually striking fight that happens on this bridge with all these red leaves falling out of the trees and stuff. Really beautiful. But he ended the demo by dying, and you didn't really get to see how the fight ended. But very, very cool stuff. I think people will be very pleased with this. So,
well, good.
And I think the last thing we want to talk about, Chris Davis, you saw Metro Exodus, right?
Yes.
You're a big Metro fan. I too am a big Metro fan. I was actually supposed to, I think we were all supposed to go to this appointment today, but we got this last minute chance to go see Sekiro. So we had to bolt, and you went and saw it anyways, but we're going to go see it tomorrow. But tell us what you thought. You got to play Metro Exodus.
I played about a 45-minute demo.
I know you've been waiting for this.
I have been waiting impatiently for this.
And how was it?
Really, 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 really good.
Okay. Tell us more.
So the way Metro Exodus works, it's no longer a very linear, focused narrative journey of your character through the underground of the Russian Metro and occasional above ground sections where the air is poison and there's deadly monsters up there.
Yeah.
It's no longer that. This is the sequel to Last Light. Basically, the remaining Spartan Rangers that survived Last Light decide to leave Moscow and see what's left of the world in a transcontinental journey.
Oh, that's kind of a cool concept. Just like saying, hey, we're tired of living like this. We're going to venture out and see what else there is.
Yeah, basically, there's no hope left in the Moscow Metro. It's basically gone to shit. It's time to get the hell out.
The answer is there are radioactive bears.
More than that. So much. The original, the way they're pushing you is that they've detected a radio signal from a government bunker in the Ural Mountains. This is the first time they've heard anything in about 25 years from the government.
Oh.
And so they're going to go investigate, see if that's someplace they can get shelter and maybe pick up some survivors along the way.
But they
and
have
build
to travel across the country.
Travel across the country on a train called the Aurora. And along the way, they're going to make stops. They're going to scavenge for supplies, meet with other survivors, hopefully build up allies, and eventually make it to this facility and find out what's going on.
Okay.
This level was set in the spring.
Because they've really been talking up the seasons. Like,
yeah, it's meant to be like a year-long journey across the continent. And this was set in the spring. The snow is not yet thawed, but it's raining and green is slowly starting to come to life.
Yeah.
This was in a swampy sort of town in which nature had mostly taken it back.
Yeah.
A lot of destroyed buildings.
Is this an environment we've seen before?
This is a fresh environment.
Okay.
The one environment we saw before was the town by the dam.
Yeah.
That's, I believe, set in summer. I believe that's I'm thinking that's going to be like the second major area you go to in the game.
Gotcha.
To back up, every area you go to is a incredibly enlarged open world area to explore, scavenge for supplies, and meet with people.
Okay.
It starts out, you're with Anna, who is your wife, and the mother of your son. And you two go out, after hitting a roadblock on the railroad tracks and encountering survivors that may be threatening, but you don't know for certain.
Yeah.
You go out to explore the scout the environment. In my playthrough, so here's the thing. What they're promising with this game is that every single one of these large open areas is promising at least 4 to 6 hours of critical path.
4 to 6 hours?
4 to 6 hours of critical path content. And for completionists, at least 6 to 8 hours worth of content to find.
Okay. Of like additional content,
you additional mean. Content to find everything that there is to find in a level. That's an incredible amount.
Well, how many? I mean, if you think about it, if they're doing, is it 4 major areas, 1 for each season?
Supposedly, I mean, we don't know that.
Because that sounds to me like 60 hours.
Roughly. I mean, that's four but times. But still, that's
bigger
Metro
than
game.
Most other Metro games for sure.
Yeah, like one. And, The one major large outdoor area level in Last Light is maybe 45 minutes of content.
Yeah.
Just exploring, fighting monsters, and things like that. This is incredibly imposing for how big it is. It's really fucking cool. So what I did in my path, and I didn't have to go on this path. I could have gone off and explored and done whatever I wanted.
So they basically gave you free reign. They didn't try and guide you in any particular direction or anything?
They give you the main quest, but I don't have to follow that if I don't want to.
Cool.
I went with Anna. We saw a church in the distance. She said she was going to provide sniper fire, sniper cover, as I get in a rowboat and I row towards the church, which is overtaken by water from the swamp. I get there, and I'm not being attacked by the faction that's there, but it's clear that it's some kind of anti-technology cult.
Ooh.
that rules the area. And as long as I holster my weapon, yeah, I can enter the church and I can interact with them. And so I row my boat in there and I get in there, and it's like there's a whole sermon going on about how technology is bad and that people who use it and accept electricity into their life are evil and are the ones that brought about the end of the world because they're gluttony. And I go up there and I'm rowing and I get stopped for a second and a little girl pops out and she's saying, "This guy is a liar. This priest is a phony. He killed my dad. He killed my sister. They've been keeping us trapped up here." And so I'm like, oh, shit. Okay. I'm surrounded by dudes, and I've only got, like, a pistol equipped right now. I need to get the fuck out of here. I start getting the fuck out of there. They trap my boat, and they're, like, threatening to fucking excommunicate me, if not, like, fucking kill me straight out.
Yeah.
I get up there. I find the girl and her mother. They provide me a little guidance and a little bit more backstory about this cult. I help them escape, and then I go into my first major combat sequence of the game, in which I'm sneaking through the church. I chose to sneak through the church and steal one of their boats and escape that way.
Okay.
And it feels like what Last Light was, with slow, methodical stealth and exploration.
Which is good. I like that aspect of it.
With, again, you can be fully aggressive. You can be fully passive. I chose the pacifistic route, so any enemy I came across, I knocked out and I kept moving.
Are they still using ammo as currency in this game or not?
So that's the thing. I don't know yet. I don't think it is anymore. I don't think they do it anymore.
Good. As cool as an idea as that is, I feel like it gets kind of.
No, it was really cool. It's a really great idea if you have what the Moscow Metro was in Metro 2033 and Last Light, in which there was an economy and trade between factions and things like that.
If I had to guess, it probably isn't that way in this game.
Because you're leading a transcontinental journey with your fellow Spartans, you just need to fucking use that. To counteract that and the need for ammo in the game, first off,
you can loot a heck of a lot more than you could before. But more importantly, you have a whole new crafting system to the game. You can find chemical and mechanical components to craft weapon accessories, upgrade your armor, repair your existing equipment, craft ammunition, craft consumables, like a distraction tool that's made out of tin cans, or like throwing knives, which you can use for instant kills when you're in stealth. Things like that. And it's really rather seamless. You can do it from your backpack, which you can do anywhere in the world. Either you're not prompted or forced to do it. And it costs you a certain amount, but you can also find workstations throughout the world. And those, if you use those workbenches, it's in considerably less resources are used.
Okay.
In my experience, I was actually surprised about how many resources I was getting, but that might be because of how big a Metro player I am. I'm used to playing on what's called Ranger mode, and that's like super scarce resources. Like,
do they have that option right from the get-go?
There will be a Ranger mode at the launch, yes, which I very much look forward to.
I have a question.
Yes.
Because my favorite thing about Metro, I think, has always been how immersive it is in terms of like wearing, like every time you would go above ground, you would have to put on your mask and mm-hmm. everything.
Mm-hmm.
I hear that's not a thing in this game.
So the at least the map I went to, it wasn't bombed. It was just nature had taken back the city.
So these are spaces in between
years.
The areas that have been
that were not radioactive. And we're just subject to nature and whatever was non-nuclear.
Post-end of the world.
Post-end of the world. Again, End of the World takes place in 2013. The first game takes place in 2033. You know, this is 4 or 5 years after that.
Yeah.
So when you're above ground, yes, that there will be sections of the world in which you will need to put on your mask because there might be some leftover radiation in some pockets, but it's not across the entire map. And you'll also find some of those signature weird psionic and psychic forces that were in the previous games, like I'm struggling.
Words, Chris Davis.
Gulags. Russian monsters.
We'll just call them supernatural
orbs,
elements.
Orbs of energy. Orbs. Okay.
That doesn't start with an A.
Oh, whatever. It started with an A.
Orbs of energy.
Anyway, these orbs of energy anomalies. These anomalies in the world that will, for example, like they were in 33 in Last Light, they would zap anything with tremendous amounts of electricity if you got near it.
Yeah.
And they just travel through the world on their own. But yeah, you don't, at least what I played, I didn't get to go underground because my demo was so short. And
45
I didn't
minutes.
I didn't explore maybe 10% of the map. Maybe I explored maybe 5%,
but don't hold him to that.
It's fucking huge. But I tried to, I thought I found like an entrance, but I couldn't figure out where to go into. But yeah, so I couldn't test out like whether the air was always going to be poisonous underground versus what the clean air on top.
Did you ever go underground?
No, again, I didn't find an entrance.
Maybe when I play tomorrow, I'm going to try and find an entrance
to
the underground.
But I did find a bunch of new enemies. There is a giant catfish monster now.
Catfish monster?
I mean, it's basically like this giant fish monster that
fishing,
kind of,
Crispy, fishing!
That
fishing.
Reminds me of the El Lago from Resident Evil 4.
Uh-huh.
Like a big ass thing, but not that big.
That's, do they have catfish fish in Russia?
I don't know. It's just kind
Crispy,
of like
where
catfish.
Were you, Crispy? What the hell? You were supposed to ask. I forgot. We had the
opportunity.
Oh
no,
for
that
Q&A
room was really serious.
We had an opportunity for Sekiro Q&A, and he didn't ask me what.
I was gonna be funny and make jokes, but that room was a little too serious for me.
There,
I was getting wigged out when they were like, when we walked in and it was like a hotel room filled with a bunch of other dudes sitting around, and then they're like, "All right, come this way." Like, I didn't know what we were getting into.
He's like, "Oh god, yeah. I'm not gonna be able to ask the
fishing
question."
I was like, "Oh no, this is like some kind of weird sex fight club, isn't it? Like,
I also encountered feral mutant humans were basically like ferals from Fallout, except, yeah, you know, I don't know, a little bit more hunched over and kind of crawly things.
Gross.
But one thing I did learn about the game shortly before my demo ended was side quests in the game. They pop up based on your proximity to an objective. So I was told that Miller, who is leading the Spartans from the train, he had binoculars. He saw, he heard about from the girl and the mother I rescued that there was an engineer out living at this old factory building. And that he thought that if I could rescue him and convince him, he could join our train and he could be significantly useful towards our journey.
Yeah.
But he was trapped in the factory by the bunch of these feral ghouls.
Gotcha.
So what I did was I opened my backpack. I crafted a compass onto my gear, my watch, and my radiation timer. This wasn't something the game
told you to do explicitly. You just decided to do this.
I decided to do this. And the compass will always point towards your most proximate objective.
Okay.
It will never necessarily point north, south, east, west, but it'll always tell you where to go.
Okay.
That's an option. But yeah, it's evidently these side quests will pop up as you're traversing the map. They're not like set objectives, but they might be later on. I don't know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the demo cut me short of well where I wanted to be. I didn't even get to try out like 10% of the map.
It's like I could have kept going for hours.
I could have kept going for hours. The game actually crashed on me as I tried to enter a house.
I'm picturing Chris Davis getting dragged out of the demo room, kicking and screaming.
Like I stayed behind for like 10 minutes talking to the devs and, you know, asking about things. By the way, when you go in there to play tomorrow, pay attention to the room.
No.
Because the entire room is one panoramic screenshot of that entire level. So anything you see in there is a place you can actually go. And it's really fucking cool to look at.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Is there still a button to wipe your face?
Yes.
Oh.
You didn't like the face wiping button?
You wipe it for your mask.
Is the face wiping mechanic maybe a little more fleshed out? Can I wipe in different directions, or is it always just the right left?
I mean, granted,
could I go up, down?
So
up.
The
Can
one
I adjust the speed.
Are there any buffs that are given to me by like so wiping there, more or less?
So let me actually gratify that. There actually
He's
is
gonna give you a straight up answer.
This time around, they've added in a dynamic weather system. They messed with weather systems in Last Light in a way, because they had a couple of storms that came through in a surface level. In this, rain can happen, for example. And the one moment in which it started raining and started obscuring my vision, I didn't have my mask on. So I didn't really need that. I didn't need to do that. I was fine.
Yeah.
That being said, who knows if those animations are in there? They might be.
Your precious face was exposed to the elements. No!
So in the demo, can you put your mask on at any time in the demo?
Yes.
If it starts raining, I'm going to try and put my mask on and see what happens.
I mean, it's one of the things about this series is that its controls are a little demanding. It's not a very context sensitive, like this button will serve five or six different purposes. There are combinations of buttons to do almost any function you could possibly imagine in the game.
Yeah.
So you, for example, you want to pull out your lighter and burn away some spider webs that are slowing you down as you're traversing a building. You press left bumper and then you press left on the D-pad. That pulls out your lighter and that will burn away all the flames.
Yeah.
You hold down left on the D-pad to pull out your generator, your portable generator, to charge up your flashlight or any weapon that involves electricity. You press left bumper and A to pull out your backpack and do crafting and manage your inventory. It's a bunch of things like that. If you're going to start out the game, you're going to want to look at that control chart to figure out exactly what everything does. But once you get used to it, it's fucking intuitive as hell. You know exactly what you're doing. And you
the hallmarks of a well-designed control scheme.
Overall,
I really fucking enjoyed this demo. It might be the biggest highlight of E3 for me. It was really well crafted. I feel like they've got the foundations for a pretty good story set up with these characters.
I think it's a really cool premise, just the idea of like doing the transcontinental journey and like picking up people along the way.
Yeah, and not only that, but not having factions that are dedicated to either helping you or attacking you. Like, if I wouldn't have approached, if I wouldn't have gotten trapped by that cult, I think I could have been friends with them.
Yeah.
So.
But who would want to be friends with a cult, Chris Davis?
Like, somebody who needs supplies. Again, this game also has that standard Metro morality system in it.
Yeah.
Based on exploration, how you interact with characters. Like, I got morality points from not killing anyone as I was escaping from the church. Mm. So, I mean, it's things like that. There's so much potential behind this game.
Cool.
Can you wipe other people's faces?
God
damn it, Crispy.
I never got to try that out. Maybe.
Greet somebody with a brisk face wiping. Hello, Nick.
Oh my god. Oh, you know what?
Don't worry, I washed my hands.
Thank you. I really appreciate
that. When did you wash your hands?
It's been a little while. But.
Oh my goodness. All right. I think that pretty much does it for tonight, unless I'm
That's all mistaken. I didn't play anything else today.
Like I said, this is going to be the last podcast you see us record while we're here in LA. We'll do another podcast Sunday night where we kind of wrap up E3 and talk about the last few things we played. Maybe we'll do kind of a recap, talk about our favorite things, what we thought of the show kind of in general, that kind of thing. So we'll get that on the calendar as soon as we have a chance. But tune in Sunday night, probably around 10 p.m. Central Standard Time for us to record that episode. We will be on the show floor all day tomorrow. Like I said, just as per usual, we'll be in Discord talking to everybody throughout the day. And if you're in LA and you want to come out to our community meetup, please, you're more than welcome to. We're doing our meetup at Button Mash LA. There's details on the website of 4playernetwork.com. We hope to see a few of you guys out there. And like I said, we have an early flight on Friday morning, so no podcast tomorrow, but we will be interacting with everybody on Twitter and a Discord, and we'll get around to recording that last podcast on Sunday. So in the meantime, you can find all of our podcasts that we've recorded thus far on 4playernetwork.com. And thank you guys so much for watching, for listening. I know it's late. We appreciate you guys staying up with us each night. But we're tired. I think we're about to go to sleep hard. Right? Or we're not going... No. No, Chris Davis. This is not what I meant. We're going to sleep so. We're going to sleep so hard is what I meant.
Okay. Next to each other.
Next to each other.
Big spoon, little spoon. Is that what we're
talking
about?
No,
here?
That's
so
definitely not happening.
So many spoons.
So many spoons.
Anyways, thank you guys so much for listening. 4playernetwork.com like is the website. We hope you guys have enjoyed the show. There's lots of stuff to be excited about. We'll keep you posted on what we see and play tomorrow. Have a good night.
Goodbye.
Good night.
Love you all.